I've seemed to have, and thankfully, you know, with the tour that's coming up to South Africa, I've seemed to have caught you just in time before the chaos emerges.
In fact, in an hour and a half, I have to get on a train to London. I'm playing London tonight. I've got a nice easy weekend. I've got London and Glasgow this weekend. And then, of course, it's Amsterdam for ADE. And then we get home for one day and then we come down to you. So, yeah.
Can you run us through a bit of the journey that's led the Soundgarden to the point now where it is heading to Africa and South Africa, which I'm sure is just the tip of the iceberg?
Well, the Soundgarden started, first of all, as a radio show, actually, on Frisky Radio. Frisky Radio asked me to do a radio show like 10, 12 years ago or so, maybe more. And and it's the same as a band or a song. You have to come up with a name. You're like, you know, spending hours and hours going through it. And we eventually came to the Soundgarden for the radio show. And then I started a record label and we carried on the name with the label, stopped the radio show because I got a bit bored of doing a radio show every week. As you know, it's a lot of work. And then Petra, my life partner and also the partner in the business, she had always said to me for years, look, we should do our own events. We should do our own events. And so once we had the brand name, she was really keen to start events. And so that side of the business, Petra runs the events, works with the promoters and with the agents to get the lineups, etc. And yes, it's very much a team thing, the Soundgarden. We now, with the label, we do a release every fortnight, which is a lot of music, because I get sent so much music, mainly from young up-and-coming producers, and I think that they struggle to get a foot on the ladder these days, so I'm always really keen. I don't care if you've got 6 followers on Instagram or 6 million, if the track's good enough, I'll put it out.
Yeah, which is amazing because, as you said, I mean, one, you must be inundated with music, but the fact is that you can take the time, listen to the music that comes in and not focus on social media is a major thing because that's always the case. You know, that's the case, I mean, as far as I've seen here in South Africa as well, from not just music production, but also in gigs that people are booked for, it also ends up being the case where this is what promoters look for, is how big is your following, never mind the actual merit.
But also another major part of it, which people don't really discuss, is that because the social media side of the Soundgarden and Nick Warren, I've got my own personal Facebook page, but then all the other is managed by Petra. Many DJs, friends of mine, will go, oh, no, but you should do it yourself. If you do it yourself, then you spend all day doing that. And you post something, and then what you do is you keep looking every 3 minutes to see what somebody has said about it. So you don't do anything.
Yeah.
Whereas if I don't post it, Petra does it. So she look at the responses. I can get on with listening to music. I suppose I get sent 600 pieces of music a week, wow. I should think, around that. And I think it's my responsibility to listen to all of them. It's my job. It is a job. Everyone thinks it's really glamorous, and parts of it are, and it's great flying around, playing music to people and
yeah.
Parties, you know, everyone's having a great time.
Yeah.
But then it's just as important. I tend to do my promo work and the demos pretty much as soon as I get up in the morning. So I'm an early riser. I wake up 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning if I'm not DJing. And for the first 3 or 4 hours, I just go through music, 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 music. And so by 9 or 10 in the morning, it's all done. And I've got the rest of the day. What I need to do.
How does that affect what you're playing out? I mean, there must be a huge amount that's completely unreleased that you're road testing, right?
Yes, of course. And with the label, even though we are doing release every 2 weeks, I'm about a year in advance with track signed. So it's great for me because it means I have music for a year that no one else has. For some of the artists, they can be slightly disappointed that their piece of music, which they finished last week and they were hoping to come out next month, is coming out next week. But then actually, I do think these days it's people tend to be proud of finishing things very quickly. It's like, I finished it in 2 days. And I'm like, yes, I know, it sounds like it.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
So I think it's quite good to say, yeah, the track is great, I'm going to sign it, and it's going to be released next year. Then they have 9 months or 10 months to listen and go, okay, I need to update maybe the production, so I need to change this a little bit. So then add or subtract from the track and just sure it's perfect.
Yeah, you know, indirectly, you're kind of guiding them in the way that as much as at the moment, everything is just quick, fast-paced. You make a track in 2 days, you release it on streaming platforms, or you upload it yourself. Doing it this way and guiding the artists that send you the music, and by you giving them this time, I think is incredible, because as you said, you see the idea, you sign it, but it then gives them the opportunity to like really, really refine it, which is amazing.
And also, recently I've been doing, there's a few tracks that artists sent me, which the ideas are super good. Like, it's great. But they're not good producers yet, nowhere near it. So I've used a guy in Australia, Jamie Stevens, who's a great producer. I get him to basically produce their track for them. So they've written it, their track, but then Jamie does the mix down and produces it and just makes it sound fantastic.
Speaking of production, working with producers, you know, on your side, whether it's production or a compilation or preparing for a live show, at what point would you say, you know, you have that moment of like cancel all your plans moment to really just not break the workflow? Does that happen often?
Things are, again, it's like, it's not a short process. It's like when we need to do the Global Underground albums, it would be about 8 months, the process of making an album. So you would contact every producer or every label that you like to say, okay, I'm doing a new GU, send me what's not released. And so you'd end up with like 300 tracks, like, and then you had to then decide which ones are going to stay and which ones actually work in the mix. But then also, one of the skills with compilation albums is choosing music that's going to be good in 10 years, that's almost a timeless quality to it. So it doesn't sound, oh, it's that one. So it takes a long process. And then in the early days of Underground, I used to mix them all on vinyl with a DAT player.
Really?
DAT tape, and just press record, start the mix. If anything went wrong, you had to go back to the beginning and do the whole thing again. So it was a long, long, drawn-out process, yeah.
On that Global Underground topic, and what you mentioned now about the records being timeless that are on there, the perfect example, for me at least, is one of my favorites is Lima, where you can listen to it today, and it's absolutely flawless and timeless. And that's the thing with your albums and also the Global Underground series, that was always something that drew me to it, was the fact that I can imagine it took you that long to put records together.
At that time, no one had heard the tracks before. Okay. Or two that people had heard before, but most of it no one had ever heard before. So a very different time, whereas now everything straight away, you know, if it's online, it's online
to a degree. Yeah. And I'm sure you probably agree, but to a degree I think it's kind of taken away the excitement of people that hunt for music, not just DJs, but people that collect music and compilations and albums. It's kind of taken that away. You know, for me, just before the internet boomed and everything was streaming and everything was online, that was one of the big excitement factors that really allowed you to go and collect albums and then listen to these things for the first time, because nothing spoiled it.
But also, you see, there's a cultural change since then. People will not wait. Back then, you would hear, say, Pete Tong would play a track that's coming out in 6 weeks' time. Remember that. And you would go to the shop on that first day and you'd buy it.
Yeah, exactly.
Or maybe Depeche Mode were making an album and it was coming out in 3 months. And you'd be excited that waiting, oh, it was exciting. The same as a movie. It's like, if you think now Netflix advertise a series when it's available.
Exactly.
Leading for months and months and months, because people don't have that anymore. Someone Shazams a track in the club, they want to be able...
They've got it.
Today. That's it. They're not going to wait. So just a cultural change where people are not willing to wait anymore. It's the same as, I think, for me, it's sad these days. I don't know if it's the same in South Africa as here, but there's very few young people that are starting bands.
Very much so. Very much so.
It takes you a year or two to learn to play the guitar. And you have to go through a process of being shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Learning the skills. With software now, you can kind of mix. The chimpanzee could come in here and mix two tracks in a day. Whereas to play guitar, it takes months and months. And again, not as many people are willing to invest that time of being rubbish at something and then eventually being
good. Yeah, no, exactly. And I guess, you know, in a sense, based on what you just said, you know, having the record label and having all these demos sent to you, that kind of helps that process of playing records that are completely unreleased, that are literally unshazamable.
Yes.
And allow for that part of the culture before it's been changed to where it is now, for that to still exist in your shows and in anything that you're putting together.
Exactly. I still get really excited when I get a piece of music that's sent to me and it's really good. It's the bouncing knee at the table that's always.
Is that the sign?
Okay, sign it.
With that said, you know, for shows to come, especially with the Soundgarden, how is it for you? Like, there must be an emotional journey with the music that you used to play, the music that you used to produce, and linking that back to what you're currently playing and how you connect the dots. I mean, how's that journey for you?
The dots don't really connect.
Okay.
I don't play old stuff. I'll occasionally play a new mix of something if it's really, really good. But I think there's so much new music, you don't need to play older classics, for instance, or stuff. The production levels of what's been made today and back then is very different. Even mixing them together, it sounds a little odd. And I think also, if you get into this, lots of DJs of my age have got into this where they stop being interested in new music and just play their old stuff over and over again. And that's a one-way street. You're never going to come. It's a dangerous street to go down.
You know, I've always found with any releases online, there's always two sides that I've kind of, you know, come to reckon with, is that there's two sides of Nick Warren. There's this electronic, emotional landscape of music that's more, for lack of a better term, chilled, and then it goes into like the four to the floor. Is that just a passion of yours outside of what you play in the clubs?
It's stuff I like, and I was an indie kid, so Bunnymen, The Cure, Depeche Mode.
Amazing.
That sort of, the Cocteau Twins, 4AD Records, that very emotional electronic music has always been my thing. And I think with Way Out West, the Bajodi, the stuff we made then, it was sort of a mixture of breaks and 4/4 and soundscape. So it's always been that sound for me.
It's incredible because they always find a way to link to each other. And you have a time where I'm sure when you do shows open to close, you may have the opportunity to link the two.
Exactly. It's great. There's been a few I do, especially in Argentina, where you're playing 7-8 hours and you can start at like 110 BPM for the first hour and just slow down it and then go all over the place. And it's great fun. It's really good fun.
You mentioned earlier, Petra, outside of that, over the years, I mean, how important has it been? And I'm sure it's been quite critical, is keeping a very clear mind on who you have part of your team, you know, for the past X amounts of years. It must be quite a big decision to always make and keep.
Yeah, because Petra and I have been together as a couple for 17 years. I mean, this line of work, it's not an easy thing to balance out being a touring DJ and being in a relationship. So for me, the best way to do that is to involve them. And of course, is very much involved in all my business. But then also, I think it's so we enjoy traveling together. So she comes around the world with me, not everywhere, but then so we both enjoy the same things, and it's like we do spend a lot of time together, which works for us. And it's like she's also got a few interns that work for the same garden, guys in Spain, in New York and Argentina that help us out with lots of things, the label or social media, etc. And it's just, it's about working with the right minded people.
How was the earlier part of this year? The traveling must have been quite intense.
Because I was lucky because in the middle of COVID, we did go to Argentina. Petra and I spent 3 months there and I did a few social distancing shows. But then I've said to a few people, imagine if you are a Manchester United football club and you say to the players, okay, no training for 2 years, but we're going to go and play every week.
Yeah.
And so to go from like being at home and not flying around the world and not DJing to going bang at it, it was exhausting. Absolutely. I'm about to get used to it again, but it was Jesus Christ.
I'm sure.
London, New York, Argentina, India, Australia, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah,
crazy.
Try your body keep up with those time zones. It's impossible.
I just sleep a lot.
Okay, so the Soundgarden's coming up. There's two shows this side. With how it's portrayed online, with how it's portrayed, obviously, from the shows that are being done overseas, what can we expect from the basis of it being launched here for the first time with the idea of obviously growing up into Africa and with South Africa?
Well, we've got some great partners, as you know, in South Africa. Richard's been great. So they've got a great reputation already. And Petra was very keen to find somebody down there that had a good reputation, which is great. And I think the lineup is really strong. Ticket sales have been amazing, apparently. So yeah, we're going to bring the vibe of the Soundgarden. It'll be a very beautiful party. Musically very open. There's lots of different styles. Claude de Sol, of course, everybody knows. Go deep. It's quite a varied lineup. So we're spending some. It's nice for us to spend some time there. It's not all packed into one weekend, which is great. So we're down in the country for more than 2 weeks.
That's incredible. Well, Nick, I just wanted to thank you for your time. It's been a great honor to chat to you. I really jumped at the opportunity when I spoke to Rich about it.
I'm very pleased to see your Joy Division picture on the wall as well.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's. I can't get enough of it. When you said that you're an indie kid listening to the bands that you rattled off mentioning, I couldn't be more on the same page with you.
Well, here you go. I saw them.
Really? Are you kidding?
Joy Division supporting a band called the Buzzcocks. And it would, I'd say, 81.
Jeez. 81. And I mean, just randomly, I mean, how do you find New Order?
I'm a huge fan of New Order. Years ago with Jody as well at West, we were invited to Peter Gabriel's studio to program some drums for Electronic, which of course was Bernard Sumner and Johnny Marr from the Smiths. So I met them both.
Wow, that's incredible. So, yeah. I hope we can get to chat when I see you in South Africa. It's been great and I look forward to seeing you here very soon.
Nice to speak to you.
Likewise, Nick.
Take care.